Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the MannKind Corporation conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, press the one followed by the four on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to speak to an operator, press star zero. As a reminder, this call is being recorded today, April 26th, 2016. Joining us today from MannKind are Chief Executive Officer Matthew Pfeffer, Chief Commercial Officer Michael Castagna, and Principal Accounting Officer Rose Elinaya. I would like to now turn the call over to Ms. Rose Elinaya, Principal Accounting Officer of MannKind Corporation. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for participating in today's call. Before we proceed further, please note that comments made during this call will include forward-looking statements within the meaning of federal securities laws. It is possible that the actual results could differ from these stated expectations. For factors which would cause actual results to differ from expectations, please refer to the reports filed by the company with the Securities and Exchange Commission under the Securities and Exchange Act of 1934. This conference call contains time-sensitive information that is accurate only as of the date of this live broadcast, April 26, 2016. We undertake no obligation to revise or update any statements to reflect events or circumstances after the date of this call. I now turn the call over to our CEO, Matt Pfeffer.
Thank you, Rose. Good afternoon to our investor community and followers of MannKind. I'm very sorry we had to delay our call last week after I experienced a sudden and unexpected retinal detachment late Monday night, which required a two-hour emergency surgery under general anesthesia the next day. I'm thankful for the excellent care at the Danbury, Connecticut Hospital and the help of my colleagues as the situation unfolded. I also want to thank the many people who reached out with well wishes over the last week. They're truly appreciated. I'm happy to report that the buccal procedure went well, and we can proceed today with our first public discussion regarding MannKind's sales and marketing strategy for Afrezza. I will discuss financing Afrezza's commercial plan and financial projections for the company overall in our quarterly earnings call on May 9th. However, I do want to address questions regarding our S3 shelf registration statement just filed. Until very recently, we were what is known as a well-known seasoned issuer, often abbreviated as WKSI, which is SEC parlance for a large, established company, well-known in the investment community, and sophisticated in its business practices. Amongst the requirements for the status is a certain level of market capitalization. One of the key advantages of WKSI status is that it is not necessary to maintain a shelf registration statement, as any filing will become automatically effective. But with the recent decline in our stock price, upon filing our 10-K, we lost our WKSI status, which requires us, again, to file a shelf registration statement to keep shares eligible for issue. This is standard good company practice and should not be assumed to signal any particular intent on our part. Similarly, most of you know that we have traditionally maintained an ATM facility, also as a matter of standard practice. With our stock price where it is, we've not felt inclined to take advantage of our ATM facility this year, but because our old facility likewise expired when we lost our WKSI status, we are putting up a new facility, which is the reason for the filing today. I can assure you we have no immediate plans to use the facility, but prudent companies keep such a facility available opportunistically. While it is clear we will need to raise capital before too long, there are many avenues that we have been exploring to accomplish this, some involving issuance of equity, some involving convertible securities that may be less dilutive, and some that do not involve equity at all. We continue to explore these options, and we'll have much more to say about them in our next call. Additionally, part of MannKind's commercial strategy involves broadening the target market for Afrezza as a way to grow sales. To do so, we plan to expand internationally. There are many jurisdictions worldwide that accept U.S. FDA approvals without the need to run new clinical trials, including Canada, Australia, most of South America and the Middle East, to name just a few. However, there's still a process required to obtain approval in those countries, including submitting our FDA approval documentation for review, translated into the native language if needed, paying fees to that jurisdiction, which can range from tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of dollars, and then waiting a considerable time for review by local regulatory authorities. This is all assuming we have done the necessary research to determine if there is a profitable market for the product in the country in question, and whether we can establish reasonable distribution channels. Therefore, we will expand into select regions strategically based on a number of variables, including the approval process, market size, and distribution and financing partners. There are also other sizable regions that may require new studies, but are still very attractive to Mankind. We are involved in discussions in regards to multiple overseas markets, but will not be announcing anything unless or until a final agreement has been signed. With that, I'm happy to turn the call over to our new Chief Commercial Officer, Mike Castagna. Mike?
Thank you, Matt, and good afternoon, everyone. My comments today will outline the strategic framework for our plans to commercialize Afrezza, describe how we intend to execute that strategy, and what our objectives are for the remainder of the year. First, thank you to everyone for their patience as we transition Afrezza back to Mankind. Note there will continue to be uninterrupted access to Afrezza for both patients and providers as we prepare for our relaunch. Product supply is available through all channels, and we expect to have our own branded inventory available in the third quarter. Patients who enrolled on our previous copay assistance program prior to April 4th will still receive those benefits through the end of 2016. The Mankind copay card program launched on April 5th and will be updated if necessary as we approach our launch date. The current patient support program for prior authorization through Sanofi remains in place, and we expect to launch our own program in early Q3. We have obviously seen a slowdown in total prescriptions since January and have been in contact with numerous physicians over the last several weeks to listen to their ideas, concerns, and reassure them that Afrezza will continue to be available. It should be noted that a number of patients faced challenges during the renewal of their prescriptions in January with insurance changes. We expect to see TRX to stabilize over the coming weeks. As we prepare to commercialize Afrezza, we are centered on three key elements: focus, prioritize, and simplify. Number one, and I'll go into each of these in more detail, we will be a focused diabetes specialty company calling on physician targets who are most likely to start and or modify mealtime insulin, as well as consumer programs in these targets for type 1 and type 2 diabetic patients within this physician target group. We have narrowed our focus to where we can gain traction and build a foundation to grow from. Two, we will prioritize partnering with payers to remove or minimize barriers to patient access, as well as raising patient awareness of Afrezza in our key target markets. And three, we will simplify the therapy initiation process and provide ongoing support to increase patient success and retention. So now to go into more detail. Our first strategic focus will be around doctor and patient targeting. We are building commercial infrastructure to target approximately 5,000 to 7,000 physicians who consist of endocrinologists and high-volume prescribers of insulin. This is inclusive of the 3,000 prescribers who have tried Afrezza since launch. Currently, endocrinologists influence over 60% of insulin initiation and or dosing changes and have demonstrated a 3-to-1 adoption ratio of Afrezza compared to a primary care physician. Since Afrezza launched in 2015, endocrinologists alone have prescribed almost 40% of our prescriptions, despite being a secondary focus to a larger primary care physician target who treat mostly type 2 diabetics. Additionally, we have recently conducted our own research confirming endos are twice as likely to be early adopters of new medications and have more experience working through prior authorization for their patients, and they generally have staff to teach patients to ensure proper product inhalation technique and dose titration. By focusing on endocrinologists and high prescribers of insulin, we will have a higher probability of ensuring patients are appropriately trained and titrated on Afrezza during the critically important first 30 to 60 days. However, once we build our foundation and improve our payer access, we will consider options for expansion to a larger target audience as we progress. Regarding patients, we are focused on two key patient types within the boundaries of our label: type 1 patients who are actively managing their disease, and type 2 patients on basal insulin going to their specialist to achieve better glycemic control. Research has shown that there are many patients who are dissatisfied with daily mealtime injections and intentionally miss 20 to 40% of their doses, often contributing to patients not achieving their target hemoglobin A1C. As we relaunch Afrezza, we will need to educate and raise awareness among our target providers who have not had alternative options to mealtime injectable insulin to help their patients achieve their treatment goals. Our second strategic priority is improving patient access to Afrezza. We recently hired Tino Quintero as our new Vice President of Market Value Access and Trade to lead these efforts. As many of you know, diabetes is one of the most expensive patient populations for payers to manage, and helping patients gain control of their disease can have attractive cost-benefit outcomes. Even though insurance coverage is typically modified by payers on an annual basis, we are already in active discussions with many plans to clearly understand where we have coverage and if barriers can be removed. It's important to note, patients have coverage and access through many plans, as we see almost 70% of patients get approved when they go through the prior authorization process. In addition, we intend to approach payers and accountable care organizations with pilot programs that can look at using Afrezza in real-world outcomes in diabetes patients. These programs will take some time to get established, but will be an important focus for Mankind due to the insights we've learned about how patients are incorporating Afrezza into their life. Our third strategic focus is to simplify the patient initiation process and increase patient retention. It is important to ensure that patients get started on Afrezza with adequate education and support right from the onset of use and during the first 30 to 60 days of treatment. Therefore, we are creating a robust patient program to enhance the onboarding process while simultaneously decreasing patient dropouts during the first 60 days of treatment. We have a new commercial titration SKU to ensure easier initiation and provide patients the flexibility towards effective titration when they start Afrezza. We will revamp the sample and copay card programs to ensure they are consistent with our new patient targets. In recent discussions, several targeted endos relayed no concerns with purchasing spirometry equipment at a reasonable cost, as their preference was to perform spirometry in their office. Currently, we know that 1 out of 4 of our new targets already have spirometry capabilities. We are evaluating several spirometry vendors whom we can work with to ensure our physicians have access to spirometry testing equipment that will meet the label and payer requirements to start a new patient quickly with as few hurdles as possible. Finally, it's important to our long-term growth to build the science behind the brand and expand into the pediatric population. This means we are looking at opportunities for label enhancements in both the short and long term. Specifically, we are focused on enhancing our clinical profile in 4 areas. Number 1, articulating the hypoglycemia rates seen in type 1 patients. Number 2, demonstrating a better understanding of our PK/PD profile. Number 3, advancing our pediatric program as quickly as possible, given the importance of this product to parents and patients in that segment. And finally, we're going to be evaluating as necessary dosing or PRN dosing for supplemental insulin coverage, especially for patients on an insulin pump who would prefer to use Afrezza during mealtime. We have begun evaluating a 2-unit cartridge that may address certain patient populations as well as a perceived need by physicians. Any new SKU will take time, and we will update our progress on the 2-unit cartridge later this year. Turning now to the execution of the strategy. As many of you have seen, we have selected most of our agency partners and recently partnered with Touchpoint Solutions to hire a dedicated contract sales organization, complemented by nurse educators to be located across the U.S. in key metropolitan target areas. The leadership of these individuals will be directly employed by Mankind. Additionally, Ray Urbanski, our chief medical officer, is also expanding his organization in the areas of medical affairs and pharmacovigilance. Our teams will have a single laser focus on launching Afrezza with minimal distractions. We are finding that talented people are intrigued by the Afrezza opportunity, and we currently have a highly qualified applicant talent pool. For the remainder of the second quarter, our focus is on building out the commercial infrastructure and hiring key talent to ensure we effectively relaunch Afrezza. We're also building an awareness campaign as we get closer to the American Diabetes Association meeting in June, at which time we will present 6 papers, including 2 late-breaker abstracts. It is unlikely that there will be purchasing mass market ads, including magazines or TV in 2016. However, we do intend to conduct focused direct-to-consumer regional advertising that is aimed at our target population. Once we are comfortable that physicians have been trained appropriately to initiate their patients starting on Afrezza, we will begin to start that campaign. You will continue to see meaningful progress throughout 2016 as we roll out our initiatives. There is a true paradigm shift occurring in diabetes treatment as the ecosystem of key stakeholders look to address real-time control, out-of-pocket costs, as well as convenience and compliance. We see reminders of this every day as demonstrated by new innovations across the diabetes space, including the growth in the continuous glucose monitor market, the excitement of the artificial pancreas, the development of a fast-acting insulin, as well as the potential launch of the first implantable rods to deliver GLP. MannKind is well-positioned to participate in and grow along with this paradigm shift. We see patients share their personal stories on social media, which gets me very excited to wake up and come to work every day with the goal of improving the lives of people living with diabetes. And now, we would like to open up the call for questions. Operator?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, press the 1 followed by the 3. Once again, for a question, it's 1-4. One moment, please, for the first question. And our first question comes from the line of Corey Kasimov with J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thank you for taking the question. So I guess first questions with regard to your strategy to better focus the product and your target audience. I'm curious, are you suggesting that Sanofi and all the experience they have in the diabetes field were not targeting the right doctors with Afrezza?
I don't want to speculate on Sanofi's targeting and looking back at that. I can tell you we've taken the insights we've learned through the transition and we're applying that to go forward in a way that we think we can win and compete.
Okay. I mean, but is it speculation? Do you know who they were targeting? Did they share that information with you?
Yes, we paid for a lot of the cost of the alliance, and we have all the data around targeting and sample drops and speaker programs, et cetera.
Okay, so it's not speculating then in terms of who they were targeting. It's just a function of you think you can do it more effectively.
Yes.
Okay, and then with regard to your contract sales reps, how many, when you have this fully up and running, how many reps will you have detailing the product, and how many reps did Sanofi have selling it when they were in control?
So I think when you look at our targets in the 5,000 to 7,000 range, and the reason there is a range is because we're trying to make sure we get the best ROI for how many people we're going to put in the field. And the range that gets started will probably be in the 50 to 70 range of reps to coverage with those targets. Once we get moving and once we see the impact and the returns, we can scale that up very easily through a company like Touchpoint, and that's been done many times. But I think it's important to launch our programs, work out the kinks, get things moving, and then scale up from there. So it's very easy to scale up. I'd rather scale up than try to scale down.
Okay, but can you tell us how many reps Sanofi had detailing Afrezza over the course of 2015?
Corey, I'm not sure. I bet you Mike knows the answer to that question, but Sanofi has always been very sensitive about disclosing numbers of reps on any given product, so I think we're still bound by that level of confidentiality. We can't disclose that. It was certainly more than we're talking about. But to be frank, to be clear, I mean, we're talking about people that are focused 100% on Afrezza. So 50 to 70 sales reps devoted 100% on Afrezza is the same as 700 sales reps targeted 10% on Afrezza. So we think we can get a lot of coverage with the people we have with the levels of focus and targeting we're doing.
Okay. I'm sorry.
The types of people we're hiring, I think, are critical in terms of the profile of that sales rep and how they go out and sell, I think, will be important. And this, the one other comment that I didn't address that I think is important is there were significant number of patients require a prior authorization, and endocrinologists are equipped to handle prior authorizations, and they're willing to do it almost two-thirds of the time, no problem. And where primary care docs are not as equipped to handle prior authorizations and don't always have the staff to deal with that. And I think that's an important consideration as you go back and look at the patients we're targeting in type 1 at the endo office and in insulin initiation and who's willing to do the prior authorization.
Okay. And Matt, you mentioned when Sanofi first terminated the agreement that you were also going to potentially focus on a new price for the product. Is that still in the works, or are you keeping the price as is?
Well, that's a more complicated answer than it may sound like on the surface. We're still evaluating some of the pricing strategies.
But remember, there's a difference between list price and net price. And so we have a lot of things we can do as far as adjusting prices to the insurance payers to get better acceptance of the products. We have a lot of wiggle room there, and we're in those discussions right now.
Okay. And then I guess my last question for you, Matt, is that you just mentioned in your prepared remarks that there are options to raise capital, including equity, convertible debt, and other. And since it doesn't sound like partnerships are on tap in the near term, what does the other entail?
Well, first I have to correct maybe a misinterpretation about partnering. We are in very active partnering discussions in a lot of quarters. The obvious place that people often ask about would be in any international market, and those are probably the most active discussions we have going on right now. There are some discussions going on domestically, but I think the working hypothesis you should assume is that we will go on our own for the near term. That's the way we've been proceeding for some time, in the U.S. at least, until we have the market better established and developed, and then we can reevaluate whether we want to branch into something larger, which would probably entail a partnership, or maybe not. But the whole world's open to us, and it's a well-known area because it was talked about a lot before we did the Sanofi deal. Many of the people we were talking to before that reapproached us very quickly after the termination. Now, these things move very slowly, especially in some of these parts of the world, but they're active discussions, and that's an obvious source of non-dilutive funding.
Are there other sources of it, though, besides the equity or convertible debt? Are there other things you have in mind?
There are many of them, and they've been evaluated. You probably know them as well as I do, and so I don't want to... The problem with enumerating all of the possibilities is it might lead some people to believe we're going down a particular path, which I'm reluctant to do. I'd rather wait till we have something specific.
Okay, understood. Thank you for taking the questions.
Thank you, Corey.
Our next question comes from the line of Keith Markey with Griffin Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking questions. I just have one. I was just wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on your direct-to-consumer advertising strategy, in particular the use of television and social media.
Yeah, I won't share much at this point. What I will say is before you drive patients into the physician's office asking for this product, it's really important that the physicians understand how to titrate them and dose them correctly and write their prescription up front. And I think once we feel comfortable that we've reached all of our targets and in those target markets where we're going to be focused, then we can scale up the social media, the digital, web-based activities, as well as, don't forget, direct mail and local publications. And so there's a lot of ways to reach consumers without doing TV commercials. And when you have a focused target within a specific area or physician group type, you can get a lot more bang for your buck. And so I'm really... first focus on making sure we get our physicians educated, informed of our new programs, and onboarding those patients with our diabetic educators. And at that point, I think we can start to do some community events and local direct-to-consumer and direct-to-patient efforts. So I won't share much, but I think as we progress in Q3, we can share a little bit more.
Yeah, and I can't help saying something as well, Keith, because it's amazing how many people write in and say, when are you going to do, big, glossy television advertising on the Super Bowl and things like that? I won't rule out that we could conceivably be dabbling in some television advertising, but I think the smart thing to do is exactly as Mike has described, to make sure we set the foundation first. And even then, I think it's more likely you'll see more kind of regionally targeted things as we experiment with what's effective before we go on to some ungodly expensive national TV advertising campaign.
Interesting. It sounds like just both of you are saying something rather important, and that is, to me, that you don't trust that Sanofi reached out to the appropriate people based upon the fact that you feel that you need to educate them about Afrezza at this point when they spent a whole year going out there supposedly with a sales force to do just that.
Yeah, I won't comment on the Sanofi comment. What I will say is when we look at the data and you look at the number of patients who started this product, a significant amount of people dropped out after the first 30 days to 60 days. And when you look at the reasons why, one would suspect financial copay, et cetera, and that's part of it. But there's a much bigger story, which is people were losing some of their effectiveness because probably 2 out of 3 people switched from an existing insulin to Afrezza. And if they didn't dose titrate appropriately and fast enough, they may have lost some of the glucose control they were used to. And they also are supposed to adjust their basal insulin up a little bit, as we've seen in our trials. And we can tell you we didn't see that consistently happen. And we think it's important to go back out and try to do it right the first time with these new targets, with MannKind behind it, and explain a lot of that, and then we'll go from there.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you, Keith.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, to ask a question, press 1-4. Our next question comes from the line of Adnan Butt with RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi there. This is Arshad Haider on for Adnan. Thanks for the call this afternoon and the question. Just on the Sanofi deal, the termination, does MannKind owe anything to Sanofi or vice versa? And are there any additional debt obligations at this time?
Good question. We don't owe anything to Sanofi by any means. There are a lot of ways that there may be some money flowing in the other direction. I think some of those are still open to interpretation, and we'll have to work that out with Sanofi. But in the meantime, I mean, I'm actually glad you asked this question because it gives me a chance to answer a question that people are largely misunderstand, which is what is going to happen during this period where Sanofi is selling the product. Because they keep saying, do we have to pay Sanofi 65% of everything they sell? And I don't know where that's coming from, but, I mean, Sanofi does have a lot of the products still in the channel. We've sold it to them already. To the extent they sell it and they make money on it, we would still get 35% of those profits, which are much likely to be profits now that there's really no sales efforts associated with it. But, you know, that'll continue until we get our own product out there, and then obviously all of the revenues are reported by us and captured by us. But, no, there's no money owed to them other than we still have a piece of debt that we'll have to discuss with them. But that's not due for some 8.5 years. There's no immediate payments expected, in, at least from us to them.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you. And then as far as cash is concerned, I think you mentioned that you'll be looking to make new strategic hires and whatnot. So it sounds like expenses might go up incrementally. Can you just kind of give us your thoughts on cash guidance moving forward? I mean, you will have to raise at some point, but maybe a bit more detail, I guess, in the near future.
I can absolutely do that. That's why I suggest you tune into our call on May 9th, which is the big highlight of that call. I mean, we've got the plan pretty well established now. We're finalizing budgets and so forth. So in that call, I can give you a lot more detail about financial projections and spending and where the increases will be and where the offsetting decreases will be and so forth. But that'll have to wait for the May 9th call when I give you a more comprehensive answer rather than some piecemeal parts.
Okay, no problem. Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Jason Butler with JMP. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. First one, just in terms of the physicians that you've spoken to that were writing prescriptions, do you get the sense that there was actually a willingness to write the prescriptions for more patients given the pushbacks they were getting in terms of managed care and patient discontinuations? And just really, what were the hurdles in their mind, and do you think in the physician's mind they were addressable?
If they weren't addressable, I wouldn't be sitting here, I can tell you that. I did a lot of my own research extensively before accepting the role here because I wanted to be confident that we could turn things around and work through the barriers that I learned from the physicians that I interviewed even before accepting the role. Since then, you know, obviously I didn't know who the top prescribers were of Afrezza or even the middle prescribers. I've had many dialogues with them, and just to understand what were the barriers, what were their perceptions, and what would they like to see improved. And, you know, one of the big ideas is really quite a few of them literally stopped prescribing on January 1 when they got the notice. Some of them were impacted because they may have been speakers, and then they were told, you know, you're no longer speaking, and so then they didn't know what was going to happen. So now that we're meeting with them, they're understanding the company and where we're going. You know, we expect them to start to prescribe Afrezza again. They were just concerned it would not be available, and they didn't want to start new patients. So when I look at the decline over the first 3 months of this year, quite a few of our top prescribers decided to pause, and I think that there was no issues with them from prescribing Afrezza. They were very happy with the profile and excited that it will continue to be available. So I think first is reassuring that confidence. The second, around the barriers, is there's a misperception, I'll say, around the type of spirometry requirements with our label to get a patient started. And the doctors I talked to believe it had to be a much more in-depth type of spirometry test, and then what do you do with those results and how do you interpret them? And so as we go back out and help explain that part of our label and the requirements as well as what the payers expect, I believe that barrier will continue to become less as we go forward. And a lot of docs, there are plenty of solutions you can do for spirometry. And to my surprise, a lot of docs said, I don't want my patients going elsewhere. I'd rather do it myself. If I can purchase a device, I'll do it right here in the office. I just need to be comfortable with that. And so we feel pretty confident on that issue in terms of getting that objection removed and helping them understand it. And then the final one you hear is around that initiation process for the patient and how simple that is or how complex that is with the prior auth. And what doctors really do care about is what's the copay my patient's got to pay and can I get them covered? And I think with the endo focus and high insulin prescribers, we're going to have a really good story for them to get patients started pretty easily and as seamless as possible with a product that's going to have some restricted access, given where we are today. We'll continue to look for ways to improve that. But again, focusing on the specialists, I've been in endocrinology, I've been in pediatric endocrinology. These guys are comfortable doing the prior authorizations. They know what it takes to get them approved. And we're seeing them through the call center. 7 out of 10 patients get approved. So while there are, you know, prior auths in the marketplace, it's not the type of prior auth that you got to jump through 3,000 hoops in order to get a patient started. You really need a couple minor things that the insurance companies just want to check the box on and make sure they're appropriate patients and they're meeting their own criteria. And part of this is explaining to the physicians what those criteria are and their nurses, and we feel the endos will be really well prepared to understand those pretty easily and be able to get patients approved rather quickly.
That's helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yep. Thank you.
We have no further questions at this time. I will now turn the call over to Matthew Pfeffer for closing remarks.
All right, well, I want to thank you all very much for your attention, and we really look forward to executing on this commercial strategy and reporting our progress throughout 2016. Our next scheduled call again is for May 9th, where we'll be discussing the first quarter's financial results, but more importantly, to share our financial projections for the full year. Thanks once again.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.